Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
So Adam Silver told owners last Tuesday that he wanted to make a final decision on the season in 2 to 4 weeks. So we're by next week, we're going to pass the two-week mark. There is a Board of Governors call late next week. So I would expect there to be some movement toward a decision into next week. And at some point, next week we'll mark the two-week mark. Could it go into June, first, second week of June? Sure. But Adam Silver gave a 2 to 4 week window last week.
That is the voice of Shams Charania of The Athletic right here on The Score with Lawrence Holmes last week. I'm Mark Grody along with Bruce Levine with you here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score until noon today. We are in for Dan Bernstein. We just had a great hour of baseball talk. We will discuss the Chicago Bears at 11 with Brad Biggs. We'll get into the weeds on the Bears and what the NFL may be planning to do. Yes, indeed. This hour, though, is about our United Center tenants. We are going to talk about the National Hockey League and the Blackhawks with Jay Zawoski in about 25 minutes from now, about 10:25. Right now, though, let's get it started with the NBA and their potential plans for resumption. We are going to do it with KC Johnson, Bulls insider for NBC Sports Chicago. He is on Twitter at KCJHoop. What's going on, KC? How are you?
Morning, gentlemen. Thank you for having me on, and also thank you for the radio head to bring me in. I appreciate that.
As always, man, we know how you do, Radiohead. And, it's a you're working for us on a holiday. So, you know what, KC? That one's free. That one's on us.
Thank you.
So NBA talks set to resume play or hoping to resume play at the Disney's ESPN Wild World of Sports Complex. That'd be the Wide World of Sports. Is this viable? What do you think? And what's your gut feeling on if this is going to work out and they will actually resume play at some point in time?
Well, it's viable, Mark, just in the sense that, it's been clear that Adam Silver and thus, the owners, and really also they've had good cooperation from the Players Association too, have been pretty focused on crowning the 1920 champion. I mean, safety and science, as Adam Silver has said, is always going to dictate everything, but it's been clear from the onset, and, the NBA received some kudos for kind of being progressive with this, obviously, since they were the first league to shut down. But it's been clear from the onset that they've wanted to try to crown some sort of champion. The number of contingency plans and the fluidity to those plans shows that they're really open to a lot of different things still, even though they're kind of nearing this 2 to 4 week window that Shams alluded to that Adam Silver mentioned on the conference call. So, I do think personally that they're going to try to resume something. I've always been of the camp that it's not going to be all 30 teams, so I don't think the bullies are going to have much to worry about, but I could be wrong there. Like I said, there's plenty of plans in the air and plenty of fluidity to these situations. So we got to wait and see what the official word is.
Casey, I also thank you for coming on a holiday. Great to talk to you as always. I want to ask you if it's easier and does it make more logistical sense for the NBA and NHL to come back? Because for the most part, the players have been paid their salaries with the their systems of revenue sharing, with their systems of a salary cap. That will not be the contentious part of NBA players and NHL players coming back.
Well, as we know, Bruce, money dictates most, not most everything, but a lot of things, or at least plays a role in most all major decisions. So I do think there's still a financial component to this. I think there it's multi-layered. I think there is a genuine desire to have closure on the 1920 season and crown some sort of champion. You know, not crowning one would be unprecedented. And so I think there's that layer to it. I think also there's the layer, and I know this for a fact, that the NBA would recognize the need that it's providing for people. I mean, I think we've all seen from whether it be The Last Dance or, you know, yesterday's golf exhibition, you know, how unifying and needed these moments can be when they're done the right way. So I know there's an element to that from an NBA perspective, but you know, your point is accurate, Bruce, in the sense that it's probably not as contentious in terms of the money that I've seen in terms of the baseball talk. However, you know, players' paychecks are just finally starting to be withheld 25% to escrow. There's tons of TV revenue at stake still. I don't know the fine print of the contracts. I just know some generalities. But, you know, again, there's certainly what – maybe it's not as contentious between the Players Association and the league as MLB appears to be from afar. But there's always a financial component to most everything with professional sports.
Talking to Casey Johnson, Bulls insider for NBC Sports Chicago, along with Bruce Levine, I'm Mark Grody here on The Score. Casey, they're not going to resume any sort of regular season, are they?
You know, like I said, Mark, I mean, nothing's definitively decided. I personally will be surprised. That's all I would say. And that's a combination of just my own opinion, my own gut instinct, and also just some, you know, I'm not even calling it reporting, but just conversations I've had. So I'm not reporting anything there. I just personally will be surprised if there's some sort of regular season. But like I said, that's one of the contingency plans on the table. Bring all 30 teams back and play 5-7 or what have you, regular season game. So that's not to say that it won't happen. I just personally will be surprised if it happens. I think the thing that the idea that's gaining the most traction is ranking the 16 current playoff teams as is, and you know, having one play 16, two play 15, et cetera. So that would obviously just be limited to 16 teams, and also, you know, eschew finishing any kind of regular season. So that's the one that I've seen kind of gain the most traction in terms of people talking about it. Again, that's not to say that I'm privy to, you know, the conversations, you know, that are going on at the high levels as of now. I mean, Silver's got another Board of Governors call this week. Obviously, everything needs to be collectively bargained. So the Players Association has to sign off on it as well. But I've all along thought that bringing all 30 teams back for any resumption of regular season is a long shot. I mean, just one quick logistic. I mean, they're talking about a 2-week training camp at each team's practice facility and then 2 weeks of acclimation inside the campus environment, whether it's Orlando, which seems to be the leader, or Vegas or what have you. You know, that's so you're going to have, like, let's just use the Bulls, for instance. You're going to have the Bulls do 4 weeks of training camp to play 5 regular season games. It just doesn't logistically seem very feasible to me. But, you know, like I said, these decisions are fluid and still being discussed.
Oh, and Casey, it would just be so, since you mentioned the Bulls, it would just be so awkward if, as you said, the Bullies, if they were to return with the new bosses, the same coach, and the same players. I mean, privately, the Bulls got to be like, no, let's not get this regular season going again, because it just would seem so disorganized at that point.
Yeah, you bring up the new front office, and you know that just added a whole different dynamic to that. I mean, my last knowledge, and I have it's not like I'm checking on this daily, but you know, Arturas and Mark Eversley are still not even in Chicago. So I mean, you talk about that. They hit the ground running and then go into a shortened regular season. I mean, that would just seem odd. But it's a possibility. I think I personally think it's an extreme long shot.
Casey Johnson of NBC Sports Chicago joining Mark Rohde and myself, Bruce Levine, for just a few more minutes. We're all sitting in for Dan Bernstein today on a Memorial Day. Casey, the revisionist history of The Last Dance is intriguing to me, interesting. I covered all those teams from the early 80s right through the 90s when they all walked out the door. The one thing that I have the hardest part dealing with is the perception of Jerry Krause, and that there has to be a good guy and a bad guy in all of this. You have a close relationship with the Krause family, as I did when Jerry was still with us. And I'm wondering what their perception of what they would like going forward with some of Jerry's memoirs that you've had been able to go through, and where you're going to be taking that in the future.
Yeah, Bruce, I miss those days at the Berto Center. You and I were side by side in those cubicles in the windowless insurance office that was the media room. the family was incredibly gracious, sharing some of Jerry's writings. I was aware that Jerry had put pen to paper in late 07, early 08 for a while. And, Jerry at one point actually wanted to be a writer. So it was kind of neat for me to look through some of those writings. There's times where actually he turns phrases very well. And other times it's a little bit more raw and needed a little bit more work. But with, you know, the family's direction and blessing and guidance, we were able to share some of those words at NBCSportsChicago.com. It was a great gift that they gave us. And we were very appreciative of it. Someday I think it's something where, the family's not really doesn't really seek too much. I feel like the family got a sense of closure. I was with them in Springfield, Massachusetts, when Jerry posthumously went into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. I spent the whole weekend with them out there in 17, and I know that how important that weekend was to them. As you know, they're pretty private people. Jerry's was a pretty private person. Where they go from here, we'll see, but it was nice to be able to offer those words during The Last Dance. And, you know, one thing I've said on other places I've talked about it is it wasn't meant to, like, try to settle scores or defend legacies or disrepute other people's personalities or stories. It was more just to throw his words out there for some added layer of perspective if you choose to want to have that. I mean, you know, if you could still read those things and still be angry at Jerry Krause, that's certainly your right. I don't think there was any agenda with those words. It was just trying to add a voice for him at a time when he didn't have that and just throw another layer of perspective to it. And we were happy to be able to do it.
Casey and Mark, I do know that the fictional part of the situation was interesting to me because of the fact that Phil Jackson had sat down with Jerry Reinsdorf before that season, and they had decided that he wasn't going to come back. So when Jerry Krause was asked about it, he said, "It really doesn't matter what we do this year. We can go 82-0, and Phil Jackson will not be back." That was a focal point of the of the entire series, and yet the meaning was totally skewed because of the fact that Phil had already told him he wasn't interested in coming back, he wasn't interested in being part of a rebuild, and that Jerry was reiterating it in an unfortunate way, making it sound like he was making that decision.
Yeah, and I think Jerry Reinsdorf, Bruce, to your point, has come out now, and you know, he's done some media interviews, including with us at NBC Sports Chicago. And I think, at least in my story, I know he addressed that and made it clear that, you know, I've said all along, the difference between 96 and 97 is, let me get my years right here. I'm sorry, 97 and 98 is pretty simple. In 97, Krause and Phil's agent, Todd Musburger, had really, really difficult negotiations, and Jerry Reinsdorf flew personally to Montana to finish the negotiations one-on-one, no agent, no Krause, with Bill, and brought him back for 97-98 on a one-year deal. In 98, Jerry Reinsdorf offered Phil that same opportunity. Hey, you want to coach? And Phil said no. So, I'm not blaming Phil either. The thing had just naturally run its course, and certainly his and Jerry Krause's trade relationship played a big role in Phil's decision. However, that's the difference. In 97, Reinsdorf was able to convince Phil to come back, and in 98, he was not able to. So, yeah, to paint Jerry Krause as the lone problem in that is just inaccurate.
Well, as long as we are scavenging off The Last Dance still, I have to say that I was haunted by the end. And the part was Michael Jordan basically saying that it was cut off too soon. And I totally understand what both of you guys are saying about Jerry Krause. But I do believe that the Bulls could have won again. And I do believe if Jordan, and this falls on Jordan, if Jordan had really wanted to get in the ear or in the face of Phil Jackson, maybe him, he flies to Montana and sits down with Phil Jackson with the power of persuasion and the earnestness from Michael Jordan. I think he probably could have gotten him to come back and maybe even Scotty and take one final run at it, because I just feel like that whole documentary was about the sheer will, desire, win at all costs. And yeah, they were tired towards the end, but I think there was still something left if Jordan had gone to bat at that point.
Well, I mean, that's obviously the fun part of The Last Dance is everybody, like Bruce said, is spinning their own revisionist history. And it's all speculative, so we don't know what the truth is. Everybody has their own remembrance. Everybody has their own perspective. I personally strongly dispute that Scotty would have come back on a one-year deal. I just do not see that happening. Phil, I still maintain, would have been gone, even if Michael goes out and talks to him. Maybe you're right. I mean, you're right. He is a willful person. I'll just close with this, though, gents. Michael said that he would never play for another coach other than Phil Jackson. Then he played for Doug Collins in Washington. So you never know.
That's a great point, man.
Yeah, never has its time limits. It's not never. It's not. It's until I do something else. It's usually the answer. And the only thing I'll chime in on both what you guys said is the fact is that Scottie Pippen was grateful to the Bulls for the sign and trade that he was part of to go to Houston so he could finally make the NBA money that he deserved. And he's forever grateful to both Jerry's for that. And the fact that that Phil Jackson wanted that next champion, the younger championship caliber team to coach, and Los Angeles was waiting for him is fact. So some of the revisionist history, and as you said, Casey and Mark, you said to your point, you can read it any way you want. There's just some non-reality to what Michael said was the team coming back for one more year.
I've been maintaining throughout this, and again, this is just my perspective, my opinion, is I feel like the Bulls won the number of championships they were supposed to win. Because I've actually heard from other people from those teams that, people are talking about 98, 99. What about 93, 94? I mean, Michael retired in his prime. I mean, that's the one that people think that they let get away. But I think anybody who watched this documentary saw how burnt out Michael was even before his father was obviously just horrifically and tragically murdered. I mean, I think he was going to be retiring whether that murder happened or not, and that just added a just awful layer to it. So, but I mean, you talk about 98, 99, leaving that title on the table. 93, 94, that team was not getting beat. I mean, they basically almost, they're a Hugh Holland's call away from advancing to the conference finals maybe without Michael Jordan. So, that's one that they left on the table, too. You could speculate, but that's why I just personally feel like the Bulls won the number of championships they were supposed to win.
And they still have not said the words Hugh Hollins in The Last Dance once. That really irritated me. But before we turn this into an hour-long segment, because I feel like we still could, Casey, thank you for coming on with us, and enjoy the rest of your Memorial Day.
Good talking to both of you guys. Thanks for having me, man.
Take care, yep. Case.
Absolutely. That is the one and only Casey Johnson, Bulls insider for NBC Sports Chicago, was with the Chicago Tribune all those years and really took over the beat, though, after the titles had been won in the new era of Chicago Bulls basketball, which is existing to this day. All right. Still to come on the show, we got Brad Biggs talking Bears with us at 11 o'clock. But next, we will bring in our very own hockey insider, Jay Zawoski of The Score. He will tell us what is cooking with the NHL and how that will affect the Chicago Blackhawks. It's Mark Grody and Bruce Levine in for Dan Bernstein on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Playoffs!
Certain things in life that if you want to make Mark Grody laugh involuntarily, as an involuntary response, I should say, play Jim Mora. That is one. I got about a list of 10 things going on in my life that you could play that I could hear. I will laugh.
Playoff. Jim Mora
continues to be.
In my opinion, that sucked.
Continues to be one of them. I mean, just the genuine, there is something funny about genuine anger. I don't know what it is. I'm Mark Rohde. He is Bruce Levine. We are here with you until noon. In for Dan Bernstein, Lawrence Holmes is here. He will do his show at noon. No day off for Holmes on Memorial Day. Bears talk with Brad Biggs in about 35 minutes from right now. And yes, the NHL is ready to move to phase two of its plan to return to play, and it will soon allow players to train in small groups at team facilities, that according to a memo that was circulated to teams over the weekend. All right, he is the executive producer of the Dan Bernstein Show. He is also 670 The Score's Blackhawks and hockey insider. And it is Jay Zawoski who posted Jim Mora on his Twitter page in the name of the Chicago Blackhawks. Hi, Jay.
Good morning, Mark. Everything I do, and Bruce, everything I do is for you, Mark. I wanted to make you laugh this morning, so I pulled out the old Jim Mora.
I appreciate that. But, I mean, all jokes aside, as we say in radio, is it possible the Blackhawks could be in a postseason scenario this year?
If they return to hockey, the Blackhawks will be in a postseason scenario. Yes. So as you said, the NHL last night released to its teams and its players and its owners and all those things the plan to move into phase two, which would get players back at the facilities working out in small groups of six on the ice at a time. It's 22 pages. It's very detailed. I'm actually somewhat impressed with how much the NHL was able to cover in this document. But once they get to phase two, they can start working out. Phase three would be a more of a training camp sort of situation. And then phase four would be return to play. For phase two, they're targeting early June, but they can't obviously set a precise date yet. But once phase four is reached, whenever that would be, the Blackhawks and Oilers would play in a five-game play-in series. And the winner of that series would face the Dallas Stars in what would be the actual Stanley Cup playoffs.
Oh my God! That actually sounds fun. I mean, I know it's ridiculous.
No. Yeah, no
that
doubt.
Sounds fantastic. I got to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a silver lining for this, which there isn't, let's be honest. But these sports leagues are going to have to get creative with the resumption of play. And look, the Blackhawks were a 12 seed, and let's be honest, the only reason the Hawks and the Montreal Canadiens, the other 12 seed in the East, are in the playoffs are because they're the Chicago Blackhawks and Montreal Canadiens. But when you look at it, could the Hawks beat the Oilers? Sure. In a five-game series? Sure. Could they beat Dallas? Maybe. You know, so it's, hey, all of a sudden, the Hawks are alive again, and we'll just see how long it's going to take to make this happen.
Jay, inform our listeners about how this comes down as far as the format. From what I've been able to discern from this, the players' associations are the ones that are handling what they would like the format to look like as far as how the playoffs would go down. And the NHL needs to respond to that and come up with a plan to move forward. How is this being portrayed out there? When would they have to vote on this situation from the NHLPA?
Well, it's been agreed on. So, Bruce, I think you have a little bit backwards. So the NHL presented the format. The NHLPA agreed on the format. So now it's just a matter of getting back to play. This is, unless something changes, you know, which is unexpected, this will be the format of playoff hockey. So it's the top four teams in each conference get byes. They've wiped out the wild card format that they've been doing for the last few years. So the St. Louis Blues, the Colorado Avalanche, the Vegas Golden Knights, and the Dallas Stars have byes. And then the 5 through 12 seeds all take part in a five-game play-in series. So that's done. Now it's just a matter of getting to the point where it's safe to have that many people together playing a game. Like earlier in phase two, which we're talking about now, which is what was announced last night to the players, that's just six players. There's no coaches on the ice. That is very informal. It's very limited. So it seems like people are talking about July as maybe playing games. It doesn't seem like they're going to be able to move through two other phases in that short of time. It's almost June already. So maybe middle of July, August is more realistic for return. And then you're talking about, look, you got a five-game play-in series. Then you have a regular Stanley Cup playoff. You're looking at October maybe for the end of the season. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they make this work. But as far as the format goes, both sides have agreed.
And what about the economics of it?
Well, it's going to be interesting as to how I think that's still sort of being worked out, because every day that goes by, we're not really sure what's going to be allowed. By August, will some fans be allowed in buildings? Probably not. But I'm sure they've got a million sort of what-if scenarios, like every company in America does. I'm sure Entercom has the same thing for us. But look, you want to talk about the economics, having Chicago and Montreal in the playoffs is going to help them huge in the ratings. Because if you look at the Western Conference, St. Louis, Calgary, Winnipeg, Colorado, Vancouver, Minnesota, Nashville, Arizona, Vegas, Edmonton, and Dallas, aside from St. Louis and the Canadian teams, there's not a lot of hockey market in there. So, and even the Eastern Conference, you know, the two New York teams are in, but I think having those two powerhouses in Chicago and Montreal, there's your economic impact. They know that those are going to have two of the biggest draws on television, and that's a huge part of why they're not even really hiding the fact that that's why the decision was made to have those two teams included.
That is the voice of Jay Zawoski of 670 The Score, talking about the NHL and the Blackhawks and ramping up a potential return plan. And if you want to see Jim Moore, just go directly to his Twitter page. But, Jay, you mentioned the 22 pages of script that were sent out around.
Yeah, you want me to just read them?
Yeah. We've got till noon, yes.
Just read them.
Don't leave anything out now, Jay. Yes, 22 pages. Read them to us. But anyway, what is the health and safety protocol like? Because we got the 67 pages of baseball, which Bruce read aloud to us earlier today. Anything stand out with the hockey protocol?
Well, there's going to be testing, but they do definitely say not at the cost of testing supplies to the public. So they're acknowledging that. They don't want to take away anything that the average Joe would need to get tested. I don't know if they're going to actually enforce that, but you have to at least acknowledge it, right? They're saying that players must wear masks except when they're on the ice. They don't need to wear facial coverings while on the ice. Now, the question is, and I haven't seen this reading the 22 pages yet, but will there be an adaptation of the face shields? Will they have full face shields like they wear in college hockey and like some of the women wear in international play, instead of, it's not a cage, but it's a full plastic shield with a little bit of a venting towards the bottom to help breathe? That would be a big adjustment for a lot of players. And I don't know how happy they would be to do that. That would be a players association sort of a thing. But I think what they've laid out for phase two at least kind of makes sense. You know, it's the best they can do under the circumstances. If they are hell-bent on returning, what they're doing here seems to make a lot of sense. There's going to be temperature checks as people come in. People are going to get COVID tests, and they can't come to the facilities until 48 hours after they've taken a test so they can see if there is evidence of an infection. So it seems like the medical side of things are laid out pretty well. So I'm pretty pleased with how it's been. And if the players agreed to this, they must be pretty happy with it as well.
And Jay, have you been in contact at all with the Blackhawks in terms of what their reaction is to this? And do you think that there are players on teams who are not necessarily at the top of the conferences this year that are like, really? We're still doing this?
Yeah, just knowing hockey players in general, any of the teams that will be participating in this, I think the vast majority of them are very, very excited about it. They want to do it. They want to play. Of course, there's going to be occasional guys that are not super into it. And they're saying that phase two is not mandatory. If players aren't feeling comfortable with doing it, or they don't feel up to it, they're not forced to take part in this if they don't want to, which is a smart thing to protect themselves. But it's kind of a guy-to-guy thing. Things have been really, really quiet around the Blackhawks lately, and they have been since the firing of John McDonough. Getting any information out of the organization has been very, very difficult, because I think everyone there is sort of on guard. We just saw they did massive furloughs, some layoffs last week. So guys they want to keep their jobs. As far as front office people go, scouting people go, PR people go, I haven't heard a peep from people in the Blackhawks, despite trying to reach out to them. Everyone's keeping it very close right now, probably trying to hang on to their jobs.
Well, now that I think about this, we do got to let you go, but I kind of hope to see hockey back and the Blackhawks back, because then they'd have to answer questions, wouldn't they?
Yes, definitely. It's so strange to me that Rocky Wirtz makes a move like he made in firing John McDonough, and he hasn't spoken yet. And there hasn't really been a demand for him to speak yet at all. I mean, if the Bears fired Ted Phillips, they'd have to talk about it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can't make a move that monumental as a guy whose name was synonymous with the Blackhawks' success. You couldn't have an MC at a PA without saying the name of John McDonough every time they would speak. And you lay that guy off and no one talks about it yet? I think it's very strange. I think the Blackhawks are lucky that they're so far in the rearview mirror of most people in the sports media landscape right now, where they don't get that sort of attention. But if this was any other team in town, there'd be reporters knocking down a door saying, talk to us. And it's very, very strange that you fire who many people think is or was the most important guy in the organization and don't say a word about it in, what, a month? Very strange, and I think that's part of why everyone around the Blackhawks has been so quiet lately.
Jay, there are no doors to knock on at this point, except in your own house.
did they remove? Yeah, I guess you're right. Just keep trying to hack into Zoom meetings, Bruce. That's a new way to do it.
Jay, thanks for the expertise, Mark, and I appreciate it. Have a great Memorial Day, and look forward to more information on the NHL, and keep up the great work on the show as well.
Thank you. Thanks for reaching out, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Yes. Yes. We wanted to reach out to Jay Zawoski. That was great. That was great information from Jay Zawoski, talking about the NHL moving to phase two, and that, yes, the Blackhawks would be in a play-in scenario against Edmonton, which I, honestly, when he said that, I got a jolt. I'm like, that sounds like fun. Blackhawks are pretty bad, but that sounds like fun, and who knows what everybody
looks like.
Wait a minute,
Mark. Mark, that's Rocky Wirtz, I think. Hold on a second. I'll be right back. Hey, we're going to Matt Spiegel and I on Saturday had a nice conversation with John Lester. We're going to bring back a chunk of that for you, our great listeners, today on Memorial Day. He'll be getting into what he thinks the path is, what's going to be the most difficult thing to do to get baseball back and himself back personally. So we'll be playing that for you at the top of the hour. We'll talk to Brad Biggs of the Chicago Bears. Continue to take your phone calls at 312-644-6767. Talk to our colleague Les Grobstein at the bottom of the 11 o'clock hour. So lots to do here before we get out at noon.
It is Mark Carotti and Bruce Levine on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. What's going on? Good morning. Along with Bruce Levine, I'm Mark Carotti.
here until noon on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Brad Biggs from the Chicago Tribune talking Bears with us in 15 minutes from now, 11 a.m. Les Grobstein speaks with us at 11:40 about what, who knows. Bruce and Matt Spiegel had Cubs pitcher John Lester on The Score this past Saturday on Inside the Clubhouse, and Lester was asked, what's the biggest challenge in dealing with the pause in action?
I think the biggest challenge is just the unknown. I don't want to get ramped up for an unknown date and, you know, kind of have to turn it back down. So it's a fine line of keeping the arm moving, playing some catch, doing some things, you know, not necessarily, you know, maybe getting off the mound right this second. But I think you just, once we get this date, then you can kind of, you know, I've been doing enough stuff to be able to build, and I feel like you're just kind of, you know, mentally waiting for that date, and once that date hits, it's like, okay, now I go. So that's been kind of the challenge, is just is balancing the unknown of, you know, every year you work towards February 14th or February 18th or whatever it is for spring training, so you have that date, that end date in mind, you know, when you're working out in November or December and you're throwing in January, like, okay, I'm building towards this date. You know, right now there's no date to build towards. So it's kind of, you know, that unknown is kind of throwing you off mentally. It's like you can't really get after it. You can't really prepare like you would for normal spring training. You know, that being said, when you get there, whatever that date may be, you know, I know, you know, our medical staff, our coaching staff, we're all going to be erring on the side of caution to get guys ramped up. So, you know, we definitely don't want to be coming in first day and throwing an inning or two innings or whatever to hitters, and now you're pushing yourself back where you possibly can't even play 81 games or 82 games. So there's just that fine line, and I think, like I said, the biggest thing is just the unknown.
And John, it's been so crazy to realize how unique and individual everybody's situation is in terms of what they can do to be ready. You know, we've talked to some pitchers who have a net in the backyard, and some pitchers have a mound in the backyard, and some guys don't. You know, what's your setup at home? Do you have enough stuff to do anything you want to do? Do you have somebody who could catch you if you wanted to throw off the mound at full strength at some point?
Yeah, I got enough stuff downstairs in my house to take care of what I need to take care of and stay where I need to stay as far as strength-wise, you know, going into a spring training. So I've got that, you know, that benefit. And I do have a kid that I've thrown to probably the last, well, since I moved up to Atlanta, 5 years or so. And he actually just took a job with last year with the Dodgers as a bullpen catcher. So I got a catcher I can throw to and throw off the mound. And there's a local high school up here that we go and play catch in the football field and baseball field. So, you know, it's nice being down in Atlanta and having the weather and having the opportunity to get outside and still, you know, be safe, but also get your work done.
John, how can baseball better market baseball players? Now, I've been, you know, I worry about the sport. I worry about, you know, the fact that other sports continue to market their players in a better fashion. I've heard from people in ownership and front offices saying that the arbitration system works against baseball because of the fact that that can be used if a player is marketed to a high level on certain teams. What are some of your thoughts about how baseball can better sell itself during games themselves and in general to make the players more interesting and also more present in people's lives?
You know, Bruce, I don't know. You know, I think that's really an individual thing. You know, I know it took me a long time to kind of let my guard down and let some people in and do some different interviews and do some different things, allow people to come to the farm. You know, 7-8 years ago, I probably wouldn't have done that. So I think it's an individual thing. I think now, too, there's so much social media, there's so much of your own branding that, you know, guys are kind of doing it on their own. They don't need a baseball team to do that. They don't need the Chicago Cubs to do that for them. You know, and just like any other sport, you know, you have the stars. You have the guys that draw the attention of the camera for whatever reason, whether they be, you know, the better players of the team or just a more personality type player, you know, whatever that may be. Like I said, I think it's an individual thing. I think anytime a team tries to do something, it comes across to the players as kind of forced, uncomfortable. You know, I think if you allow the player to be themselves and to kind of have their own ideas and then the team go along with them, I think you're going to get, you know, more of that, of what that player or that individual is actually like. You know, I know they've started miking guys up during spring training games. You know, that's a perfect time to do it because it is a little more relaxed during the regular season. I don't think, you know, I know for me on a personal level, if I'm pitching and I got, you know, player A over here on a microphone talking to some analyst during a game, I don't really feel like he's focused in everything he needs to do in a regular season game. You see what I'm saying? Like, so there's like a fine line there of getting that involved. You know, like I said, I think number one is the individual, is the player, the person himself, and what he wants to do to market himself, to brand himself in the game.
I think that's wise. I think that the guys who are willing to share and are expressive should be encouraged, as opposed to trying to drag everybody up to a certain level. That makes a lot of sense. What the game can control is maybe a rule here or there to make the game more interesting. I miss action, John. I don't know about you, but I miss balls in play, as opposed to home runs or strikeouts. And do you think the game would be served by trying to find a way to tweak a couple of things to give us more action, more fielders moving around, more runners running around the bases?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think they kind of tried that with the new baseball, that they won't admit that they put in play. And then that produced more home runs. So, you know, now you've got, I think their intentions were to do that, were to allow more balls in play, but then that turned into a driving range, basically. They're out there, you know, guys are out there hitting Titleist Pro B1s as opposed to, you know, right. I think a more fair ball. I think if you want more action, then yeah, you can go somewhere in between where we've been. You know, the playoff ball of this year and then the regular season ball. You know, I think right now in our era and what we're teaching, you're not going to result in more balls in play. You know, you are in the aspect of power. You know, you're going to result in more doubles, more home runs. Stuff like that. But as far as choking up and putting the ball in play, you know, Bruce, you were talking about the arbitration process. These guys that get called up know what's getting them paid in arbitration, and it's not singles to the opposite field.
Right.
It's slug, it's OPS, it's home runs, it's, you know, it's all this stuff. So you've created, through this, you've created your own problem, basically, in baseball is guys started getting paid for these numbers, and now you're reaping, or you're seeing the negative side of it. Guys are stronger, they're throwing faster. You know, you're preaching more spin rate. You're preaching, you know, you're not worried about location. You're just throwing the ball as hard as you can and spinning it as hard as you can. So that's a perfect storm for. Okay, if I make a mistake and the guy clips me, it's a homer. If I don't, I just throw hard enough to where he swings and misses, and now I've got strikeouts, walks, home runs. You know, that's the game we're in right now. I think everything will loop back around. You know, I think owners are always looking for ways to cut costs, and, you know, they'll find a new metric that means more to them than OPS, and that'll change the player into something else. You know, the players are always evolving. The owners are always evolving. So, like I said, I think the game is a big ebbs and flows game, and I think right now we're in one of these, I guess, fads of the game, and I think everything will kind of loop back around, hopefully, next couple years.
John, Matt and I really appreciate you joining us today, and all the best to you and your family. We hope we see you soon. My last question to you is this. When the first player does indeed test positive, how do you think that will follow with the rest of the group? And do you concern yourself with your conversations with teammates and other people in the game as to how the reaction to that will occur and how baseball will handle that?
You know, I think that's kind of a lot of the conversations we're having right now. You know, that's that trust factor in our medical staff. You know, I can speak for the Cubs. We've got a great medical staff that bends over backwards for us and does amazing work. And so if we are getting back and we are playing, you know, we need to have this open line of communication and talking to where if something like this does happen, you know, we need to be informed. I think that's really the big thing for players is we want information as well. You know, you can't just tell us to come back and play and expect us to just turn our heads and go, okay, yeah, we'll play with this risk. So as long as we have the information and the doctors have a plan for something like this to happen, that makes everybody feel more comfortable. And then, you know, if it does, then we have this protocol in place to where, you know, whatever that may be, quarantine, more testing, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's a long list of things that we can possibly do. But like I said, that's a huge topic of conversation right now with both sides is trying to figure out the steps of which that, you know, kind of how to handle this thing going forward. Everybody's ultimate goal, obviously, is to get back into play. And that's not only for the players and the owners, but for the fans, more importantly, and for the country. I think we all need to take our minds off of what's going on and get back to playing and having sports and trying to get a little bit back to normalcy if we can. So we're all striving to get there, and hopefully we can do that soon. But, you know, just know that it's a process right now, and it may take a minute, but we're trying to get there.
Cubs starting pitcher John Lester on the score this past Saturday with Bruce Levine and Matt Spiegel on Inside the Clubhouse. Always big-time marquee guests like Lester. Bruce, biggest takeaway from Lester?
Just the idea that, Mark, that the both sides need to be listened to less by the fans, and they need to just hunker down and get this thing done. I think that's what I took out of it, that he didn't go on and talk about the idea that the players are right or the owners are wrong, but that a deal needs to be struck and that the fans shouldn't listen to the bluster of documents being leaked out from one side to the other, that this week is crucial to getting a deal done and baseball back on the field. And I was encouraged, as we talked about, you know, coming into our show today at 9 o'clock, Mark, the fact that he said he thinks this can be done, and it can be done in a way without people tearing the sport apart over dollars and cents.
All right, we will take a quick break. Les Grobstein joins us at 11:40. And coming up next, let's talk Chicago Bears and the NFL with the Chicago Tribune's Brad Biggs. Biggs is next. This is Grody and Levine on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.